Beijing, Shanghai, Shenzhen, and Guangzhou, China's first-tier cities, are losing its appeal to young people. In recent years, some second-tier cities have emerged as attractive destinations for young people to work and live in, thanks to their regional geographic location and dynamic innovation ability. Okay, so here I think one needs to clarify the terms a little bit. So, Limei. We know what first-tier cities are, and I just named them. What about the second-tier cities? How big and small are they?
I would say cities like Nanjing, Wuhan, Chengdu. So we are looking at cities not necessarily on the coastal region, but cities that nonetheless have a large population, let's say in the vicinity of 10 million or slightly fewer than that.
So often we're talking about these capitals of provinces, and they're still pretty, well, really big cities, actually.
Yeah.
Depends on what you compare with. And they are becoming the cities that young people are very interested in to go live and work in. So let's look at this survey that's shed some light on the current choices of where to work and live in for these young people.
Well, recently a survey interviewed about 2014 correspondents, which was conducted by the China Youth Daily Social Survey Center, showed about 52.7% of the respondents believe the main driving force for urban development is good geographical location, and 49.7% of respondents believe that it's strong innovation. Other important factors include abundant financial resources, talent gathering, accessible transportation, scientific urban planning, good natural environment, high degree of openness, and high level of cultural construction, and so on. In terms of which kind of city is most attractive, 60.4% of the respondents chose a city highly focused on environmental protection and cultural soft power development. 58% of the respondents believe that it's a city that encourages innovation and entrepreneurship, which supports small and medium-sized enterprises. And 51% of those respondents voted for a city that promotes a smart urbanization via IT. 50.9% of the respondents liked an open and inclusive city that welcomes talents, and 39.8% of the respondents believe that people-oriented policies can ensure people live and work in peace.
Mm-hmm. So that's really interesting, and I think we need to break it down a little bit. This survey looks at here two big sections. One is, what is the driving force behind a city that has a future, that is attractive to young people? And here, I don't necessarily think this is ageist, because when we look at young people, I think this is meaning that how do you get new talent, new blood into a city? And these people, if they really like it here, they will settle down, meaning that they can have families here, buy apartments and work and consume. So that brings in like a lot of future capital. So I suppose this is possibly the reason why that this is an interesting and important study. So there's the driving force behind the cities. And the other thing is, what makes it attractive? Liming, how do you look at, or how do you analyze this kind of distinction?
Well, I spy two points that's really impressive to me. One thing is good geographical location, and that to me is always the formula for a good civilization, and then more specifically for a good city. Because at the moment, even though we're talking about modernization, that sort of thing, we are still not yet at a point where we can allocate resources on a more evenly manner. I mean, in a more evenly manner. That means resources are going to be going to the places where they are most efficiently utilized or where they are most efficiently delivered. And that means cities that are well connected. And if you look at the map of China, you realize that a lot of the promising second-tier cities, they are located next to either to the big river, I mean the Yangtze River Delta region, and or maybe the Zhujiang or the what do you
Pearl
call it?
River.
Pearl Harbor, a Pearl River Delta region. So location, geographical location really is important. And then you also take another look at the map of China, you realize that a lot of the second tier cities are promising cities are located in southeastern part of the country. That's where we have, well, I would say a flatter topography, where it is easy to build infrastructure such as roads and cities where people can just move around very freely. So I think, for one thing, good geographical location, I mean, people are not wrong in looking for those resources when they are finding a place to settle down.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And when, again, you look at the map of China, especially the map of trains and railroads these days, you can see that with the two deltas that Limey just mentioned, the Yangtze River Delta, which is located a little bit more in the middle and coastal southern part of China-ish. Yeah, that's China's a big
southern.
Yeah, but then there's the more the super southern part of the Pearl River Delta, and when you look at the map of trains and railroads now, you can see there's this intricate spider web of high speed rail and bullet trains that's that connects those areas, and I think that's really vitalized the whole region in the sense that in the past, if you were living in a smaller town or a smaller city, for you to get to that regional capital or that promising second-tier city, that was really hard. But now, traffic and this transportation availability has really made things a lot easier and has, I think, brought a lot of energy to these regions, and possibly that can be explained with this geographic location point at this moment. Although it's not just about the natural geographic place this place is at, but it's more about how is it connected, I feel, within that region.
And the other noteworthy point that I took away from this research is actually that the finding that 60.4% of respondents choose a city highly focuses on environmental protection and cultural soft power developments, meaning they are looking for cities that have passed the industrial age, I would say, and that are cities that are sort of focusing more on high tech or cultural industries, meaning they don't really want to live in a city that's industrialized, that's heavily industrialized, and that's polluted. And this really inspires me to think deeper into the question: why are people paying so much attention to the environment and to ecological developments? And then I realized that perhaps because, well, many years ago when we were looking for a job, we sort of didn't put that part of the spectrum into consideration. I think precisely because back then there was not a lot of attention, there was not a lot of news reports on how polluted the cities are, I mean the industrialized cities are, and maybe perhaps even the cities weren't as polluted as they are nowadays. But now that we've seen the central government really taking initiative to sort of push regional governments to clean up the air and the water, and then we also see a correspondingly more reports covering the changes being done to the situation. And I think the general trend in the society has an impact on how people think. And that's why young people are putting this as one of their priorities when they're looking for the job. Whereas really, I think in comparison, geographical location and also the ability to find a job and the room for development should always be the priority they look for.
Mm. Well, Tony, are you surprised when you saw this that actually, is the environment good or not? Or the cultural soft power that one city embodies? These are actually some of the really attractive factors for young people when they're searching for a job.
Well, I also saw on the survey that accessible transportation was 43.3%, and I think that this is very important, especially for people coming out of a rural area into a perhaps a tier two city. Because, I mean, I came from a rural area, and there was no public transportation, and you had to get by a car. And sometimes if you don't have a vehicle, it can be a bit of a headache. So going somewhere where you can, you know, travel and go, you know, go to and from work very easily is definitely huge. And a good natural environment, this was 28.3% on the survey. And I think that this is also very important. And some of the second tier cities tend to have a bit more of a better environment than I would say some of your, you know, metropolises.
Or yet to be industrialized.
Yes. So it's just, you know, and for me, this wasn't very, you know, I guess you could say surprising, because I feel that, I mean, for myself, I'm actually attracted more to areas that have a bit more, I guess you could say, a cultural construction to it. You know,
oh, that Beijing.
Yeah, Beijing has this feel where it's this huge city, but it still has some cultural connection to it. You can still see a lot of the older buildings, and it's not so urbanized where it's just, you can't really tell. There's other cities that just kind of lose their cultural connection, if you follow what I'm saying.
I suppose maybe you were talking about the history of a city or its unique culture.
Right.
And I know that is an intangible thing. And a lot of the times when you're under financial pressure or you're struggling to find a place to live for tonight or the next month, and then I thought these wouldn't be so high up there on the list. But interestingly, now people are looking at these rather soft elements, so to speak. And Lai Ming, you attributed that to nowadays, young people are not really struggling with being fed or not, and they can think about what's a better future for me, or what are the higher level of
demand or satisfaction
or inclination, so to speak, when the basic needs of a human being is being met, so to speak. But there's one thing that I thought was really interesting that came from what Tony just said. You mentioned that in the survey that good environmental factors of 28% was what these people said that, oh, it's key to the driving force behind the city. And when you look at that percentage, it's not really that high. But when you look at what makes a city attractive, and then there's, again, the environmental factor that comes into play, but right. That is actually top on the list.
Mm-hmm.
So is it safe to say that young people are looking at this as, I want to go to a city that it has great environment, but when I look at how cities are developing, then environment is not really top on the list, so to speak, because there are some other bigger factors in play, like we mentioned, geographic location, finances, and the ability to innovate in a city. And I find that to be quite interesting, because it's a similar factor, but ranked differently when it's a different focus in the question.
Yeah, this is really a question about how rational people are answering this survey. And obviously, when you're looking for a city to settle down, the first question that pops in your mind is, will I be able to find a job? Will I be able to feed myself? Will I be able to find shelter? And when those problems have been solved, obviously you want to improve the quality of your life a little bit by finding out whether there is a place you can hang out, whether you can enjoy, whether you can relate to the city. And that's where the environment and also the cultural aspect come in.
Well, there you go. So environment, it can be interpreted differently, because I'm thinking about clear waters, mountains with green trees covering it.
Well, you cannot find jobs.
maybe that could be the downside of things.
Well, I think, for example, I've done a little bit of traveling since I've been here in China, and I still say that Hangzhou is my favorite city. I mean, when I traveled there, I mean, it was just gorgeous. You had the West Lake.
Yeah.
So there's this natural element where it's, you know, you have the trees that kind of hang over the road. So it's just very beautiful. And it's, you know, it has this tea culture there. So I felt like I was immersed in, well, the old China, as you know, some of us say. So I think that this is very important, and that I would be, and I think a lot of people would be, well, I guess I could speak for a lot of my foreign colleagues, and some of them have left to go to live in Hangzhou, even though the pay is significantly less than in Beijing, but they were still willing to make that pay cut because, well, the environment was better for them.
And you may not have the wrong judgment about the city of Hangzhou. So perhaps when you said that Hangzhou reminds you of an ancient China, but really it is also a city that is on the rise to become maybe a first-tier city in the future. For instance, in the first 10 months of 2018, the city witnessed a net inflow of high-tech talents. 69.1% of fresh graduates stayed in the city, and Hangzhou is also showing its increasing charm to students in other parts of the country. And the salary isn't really that bad. The average salary in Hangzhou from January to October this year stood at 9,566 yuan, and also that was the almost a 13% increase from a year ago. So you know what? Maybe you move to Hangzhou and maybe in a few years you'll be earning the same salary you're making here in Beijing.
It's also about banking on the future in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also Hangzhou, when you mentioned that beautiful city, in the old days, there was this saying in China about a saying that 上有天堂,下有苏杭.
Oh, true.
So Suzhou and Hangzhou are the heavenly places on earth. So there's heaven up there, and down here we have Suzhou and Hangzhou. But that was in the old days. And today, I suppose they're maintaining, to some level, their charm. And also, Hangzhou has Alibaba.
Yes.
So this is one of those modern tales of a company making a city in a way. I'm also thinking now, like in recent months, there's a lot of buzz in the U.S. about major tech companies finding
Amazon settled down in what city? I can't remember.
Long Island.
New York.
New York, yes. Oh. So that was the HQ2 for Amazon. And recently, Google just set up a second headquarter in Austin, Texas. And another one, I'm thinking, well, one of the... another
cheaper real estate there, for sure, in Texas.
And when a mega company like that makes such an announcement and real estate prices shoots up in that area,
that's right,
and it will gather and attract a lot of young people, young talent to come in and settle down, that kind of thing. So I think these cities have really been trying to actually bid for the favor of these mega companies in the U.S. So it's quite interesting to see that these days, sometimes the big companies, they can become such a driver and magnet for talent, and it can give the place a facelift if you can have so many people coming in, you know? And that all sounds really exciting, and we're kind of seeing that. We have seen that in Hangzhou as well. And when you have such a big Chinese tech company that's found its home in Hangzhou. So yeah, these are some of the really interesting factors here.
Yeah, another highlight of the survey is actually 83.6% of the respondents thought their hometowns are more and more attractive. And this is what's got me interested, because among the 2014 correspondents, I wonder where they're from. I mean, at least according to the examples provided by the Chinese report, they are citing people whose hometown are from coastal areas, for instance, Xiamen. So I'm not sure their opinion would represent the opinions of most Chinese folks here in this country. And also, I try to understand why so many people believe their hometowns are more and more attractive. Certainly, urbanization has been taking place across the country, and obviously, most people who find a job in a different city and work for many years may find it a different city in their hometown than they left behind. But really, how do you define what is your hometown? Because for me, as someone who's from Jiangxi province and working in Beijing, I would think of any city that's in Jiangxi province as my hometown, because If I were to find a job in Nanchang and settle down, I would think I'm home. I mean, Nanchang is only a few hours from my real hometown in Sichuan, which is a small county. And yeah, I can totally drive home every weekend, and that's considerably much more convenient than living in Beijing, where I have to spend 16 hours on a train to go home.
Yeah, and that's only the first leg, because Liming has to and then get on a car and other transportation. Yeah. So going
it's a whole
home,
day.
Yeah, it becomes a arduous journey of going home.
That's interesting. You mentioned like your interpretation of hometown. Like for me, California is, you know, the state where I grew up, and it's a, you know, it's a relatively big state. But I guess I wouldn't consider the whole state my hometown, because I grew up in a very rural agricultural city in California. And when I was there, I was really excited to leave. I couldn't wait, and I thought that, you know, my city was very boring and there's not much opportunity, which is true. But when I left and when I was gone for a few years, I couldn't help but think about home and, you know, being, you know, having access to, you know, fresh produce and all of these things. So I just think that when you're there every day, you kind of take it for granted, and then when you leave, you start longing for home. So I can definitely understand how some of the, you know, the correspondents would rate their hometowns as being, well, more and more attractive.
Yeah, that's so interesting about hometowns. And Liming, I have something I need to ask you here. A little bit of a, first of all, translation question. So in China, we have this, on our important documents, there's this category called 籍贯. So that's like, I wouldn't say that's hometown. That's like the hometown of my father. And so I always put down Shandong Rongcheng, Rongcheng County in Shandong Province. I've never been there ever in my whole life. So, and but in my dreams, it's a beautiful place and a sweet place. And we still have extended family that still live there. And well, I grew up here in Beijing, and like mentally, I would consider here as my hometown. But I'd like to mention a little bit about the 籍贯, or the faraway home of your dad. And I suppose this is something that's very Chinese. I don't find this in Western culture, but Liming, I'm still looking for the translation of it. And
I don't know how to translate that.
Yeah,
actually,
it's a really
for me
cause, concept. Yeah,
because that's a different concept for me too. Because my father, he settled down in a different city than he was born. And then also my grandpa settled down in the city that he was born into.
Yeah.
So I suppose for my family, we never had this concept of 籍贯 or hometown.
But you have to fill it in all these important documents.
So in my case, I just fill in the city I was born into.
And, oh, really? You can do that?
Yeah.
Okay, we need to talk about this after the show. So in my mind, somehow, I have this remote hometown or some sort of home in my mind. And I speak with extended families about this place, and I've found something that resonates with a lot of the articles out there about the weathering villages, the weathering fringes of rural towns. And I don't know how that corresponds with how people look at their hometowns these days, because China is going through so much change. Within the last 40 years of reform and opening up, Chinese people have never moved around the city, the country so much, or at least it has been one of the periods in history that is of peace and of mobility for people. And that has brought so much change for the people here living on this land. You're listening to Roundtable. We'll be back after this break.